Fertility and Sterility, which is a very good journal in reproductive medicine, actually published a study where they looked at 300 couples undergoing a combination of IVF and ICSI. These 300 couples participated in a total of 415 treatment cycles. 202 were ICSI and 213 were IVF. And the outcomes of these cycles were compared among women who smoked versus women who did not smoke but had partners that they smoked. And what we found is that the chances of failing fertility treatment with ICSI, this is when you take one sperm and put it directly inside the egg, for male smokers was 3 times as high compared to a males that were not smokers. This is quite significant.
Mm-hmm. And just got to show you that even though ICSI is such a powerful technology, we're still not really that good at picking the right sperm or the best sperm.
Yeah, because even though the motility is not a problem because you're taking a sperm and put it in there, there is still the DNA damage, the quality of the sperm, the ability of the sperm to fertilize and drive embryo development. Hi, superhumans. I'm Dr. Mavis Garcia.
And I'm Dr. Wise.
We're two of the physician leaders at Marken Fertility Center, otherwise known as our baby, MFC.
As fertility specialists, we've witnessed firsthand the challenges, triumphs, and the myriad of emotions that come with trying to conceive. Whether you're just starting to think about having a baby, actively trying, or facing challenges along the way, My Fertility Podcast will be your go-to resource for honest conversations and a supportive community.
So grab a cup of coffee or tea and settle in and let's demystify the world of fertility together. All right, it's finally time to talk about sperm. I've been wanting to talk about sperm for a long time because when it comes to fertility, there is so much emphasis and, may I say, pressure on women that I think we need to spend some time also talking about the other side of the coin, which is main factor on the sperm.
Oh my God, 100%. Sperm is 50% of the equation, right? And so the importance of the health of sperm, focusing on sperm health, male lifestyle, male vitamin supplements, it's important for us to talk about it as well and for them to take some responsibility, just sort of societally.
Yeah, absolutely. So today we're going to talk about the lifestyle factors that can lead to poor sperm parameters and what to do about it. So we're going to answer questions like, how about smoking? How about marijuana use? How about alcohol? What kind of foods should men be eating who are trying to conceive? What kind of things can and can they not do, or should they not do?
And then some other really fun ones, like the impact of heat, whether that's okay or not. And then, of course, the timing of ejaculations.
That's right.
Should men be saving up sperm, or more frequent ejaculations are better, right?
So sit on tight. Here we go. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about sperm. So the first thing that I want to talk about is cigarette smoking. It turns out it's quite bad for you, and it's particularly bad for sperm as well. How bad? Actually, it turns out it's very, very bad. So let's go over the studies. Mm-hmm. First of all, are men still smoking, even though we know so much about how bad smoking is for you?
You know what? It's so interesting. When I was reading this over, I was shocked that smoking is still so prevalent. You know, according to the World Health Organization, 30% of all men who are 15 years or older are smoking regularly.
And actually, 46% of smokers are men of reproductive age. So that's half of all smokers are men who are of reproductive age. There was a very large meta-analysis. A meta-analysis is when you put many studies together. And this is very powerful because sometimes studies can say one thing versus another thing. But in a meta-analysis, you're combining the data from multiple studies. And they looked at 26 countries or different regions around the world, and they looked at sperm concentration in men who were smoking. And they noticed that there was about a 13 to 17% lower sperm concentration in smoker versus non-smokers.
Wow, that's a big drop.
And so cigarette smoking has also been associated with not only low sperm count, but also low sperm motility and morphology, as well as the impact on DNA damage and abnormalities in mutations and aneuploidies within the sperm.
And that can obviously lead to infertility and potentially increased risk of miscarriage as well.
Now you might say, okay, well, that's fine because we're going to be doing IVF and ICSI. So the lab is going to be picking the best sperm, or they're going to take one sperm and put it inside the egg like in ICSI. Therefore, who cares about the motility? But let's put a pause on that as we go through the research. Fertility and Sterility, which is a very good journal in reproductive medicine, actually published a study where they looked at 300 couples undergoing a combination of IVF and ICSI. These 300 couples participated in a total of 415 treatment cycles. 202 were ICSI and 213 were IVF. And the outcomes of these cycles were compared among women who smoked versus women who did not smoke but had partners that they smoked. And what we found is that the chances of failing fertility treatment with ICSI, this is when you take one sperm and put it directly inside the egg, for male smokers was 3 times as high compared to in males that were not smokers. This is quite significant.
Mm-hmm. And just going to show you that even though ICSI is such a powerful technology, we're still not really that good at picking the right sperm or the best sperm.
Yeah, because even though the motility is not a problem because you're taking a sperm and put it in there, there is still the DNA damage, the quality of the sperm, the ability of the sperm to fertilize and drive embryo development, and that's certainly affected by smoking. Actually, the mechanisms are not exactly clear. It could be due to the impact of nicotine on sperm DNA or the increase in reactive oxygen species, which is what happens when the capacity of the sperm to deal with oxidative stress is compromised. It's also important to know that while vaping has less chemicals than traditional cigarettes, still has nicotine. Nicotine itself has been shown to have deleterious impact on sperm parameters.
So really vaping or smoking, both are bad, regardless of what we might hear kind of on the media.
It's important to know that it's not about yes, you smoke, or no, you don't smoke. Ideally, there is zero smoke. There's no question, but we know smoking is addictive. We know smoking is really hard. We also know it takes time to stop smoking. And time is not something that a lot of people have when they're going through the fertility treatment. So there was a study showing that the impact of smoking is actually dose related, with the highest negative impact being if you're smoking more than 10 to 20 cigarettes a day versus less than 10 cigarettes a day. So this is actually good news, because if you cannot completely stop smoking, even if you can at least decrease the amount of smoking to less than 10 cigarettes a day, if completely quitting is not possible, that reduction alone can have a positive impact in fertility outcomes. And speaking of quitting smoking, another very interesting study looked at amongst past smokers. For every year that a man had quit smoking, it reduces the risk of failing ART by 4%.
That's big.
Yeah. And this is specifically between clinical pregnancy and live birth. So it's not only fertilizing and making an embryo, but actually achieving a live birth. So for every year that a man had quit smoking, the chances of failing ART treatment reduces by 4%. So this is important.
Oh, yeah. Big time. Another really big topic that comes up a lot clinically, I think, is marijuana, right? And whether there's an impact on sperm and pregnancy and embryo quality. And with marijuana, there's not nearly as much research about it as there is around cigarettes, you know, probably for a variety of reasons. Where marijuana was illegal in certain countries at certain times, there was just less research about it. People just probably weren't as forthcoming about their usage of it. And so now with legalization of marijuana in Canada, for sure, there's a lot more research that's starting to come out about it. Marijuana and its active metabolite, tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC, can alter the signaling system within spermatozoa and sperm, which can result in negative effects on the creation of sperm and male fertility. And so, really, there is a study done in Fertility and Sterility, which, again, is one of our favorite journals, that was published in 2018 looking at this. They took a total of 409 men who were attending a fertility clinic, and they did their semen analysis, and they did a questionnaire looking at various lifestyle factors, including their marijuana use. And of these, they found that 43% of men actually reported marijuana use, which is a surprisingly high number, but I'd say that's in keeping with what I see clinically.
Me too.
So compared to somebody who was a total non-user of marijuana, semen quality was significantly decreased in volume, the concentration, morphology and the total motile count. So that's like the actual number of swimming sperm compared to never users. And so that is a really, really significant piece of information.
There was another study besides smoking and marijuana. There was another study looking at the association between caffeine intake and alcohol consumption, specifically in IVF and ICSI outcomes. And it looked at both men and women. This study was also a meta-analysis. They combined 12 studies on caffeine consumption and 14 studies on alcohol consumption. And between of them, they're looking at 26,992 couples that were going through IVF and ICSI. And the results were very interesting. Mm-hmm. The good news of this study is that women's and men's caffeine consumption was not significantly associated with pregnancy rate or live birth rate. Now, again, this was a combination of studies. There have been some studies showing that you should be having less than 250 milligrams of caffeine a day, and then after that, it can have an impact. But at least in this study alone, they didn't seem to have a significant impact at all. That is for caffeine. Now, for alcohol, the bad news was that both maternal and paternal alcohol consumption was negatively associated with pregnancy after IVF and ICSI. As a matter of fact, this was quantified. So compared to people who never drink alcohol, the chances of achieving a pregnancy after IVF and ICSI decreased by 7% when women drank more than 6 drinks of alcohol per week. And it decreased by 9% when men drank more than 6 drinks of alcohol per week.
That's a huge number. Mm. When we're talking about pregnancy rates for IVF, it could be 20, 30, 40, 50%. That's a big jump.
6 drinks is a lot. So, I mean, people who are like, oh my God, I went out last night, I had a glass of wine. Does that mean it's all over? My egg retrieval is next month. Terrible. Like, no. So I think
yeah.
6 drinks to me is a lot of alcohol. So I think this is reassuring that the occasional glass of wine here and there when you're celebrating is probably fine.
When we're talking about sperm and sort of trying to improve sperm, you know, we've talked about caffeine, alcohol, marijuana, smoking, but let's say somebody goes out and they quit smoking. So how long is it going to take before you start seeing improvements in sperm quality? How long do they have to quit before they can, let's say, maybe do their IVF cycle?
Well, sperm cells take about 7 to 4 days to fully mature. So you want to commit to a lifestyle, and any regimen that you do or any impact is going to take at least 3 months before you see any changes when it comes to sperm. We've talked about smoking, we've talked about marijuana, caffeine intake, and alcohol. Now let's talk about nutrition. So what would be some of the things that, from a dietary point of view, can support sperm health?
Really, when it comes to supporting sperm health and trying to optimize health, diet for sure makes a big difference. So certain foods, nutrients can for sure improve sperm quality. And so the big things to avoid or to limit: red meat, processed meat. Eating too much of these things might not be great for sperm quality, and for probably your waistline and your cholesterol levels
and your heart health.
All that. Sugary drinks and snacks also better to be avoided. Moderate those as much as possible is important. Processed foods as well. They might have higher levels of omega-6 fatty acids, which can be quite inflammatory, and those may be harmful to sperm. And then, of course, minimizing alcohol, which we talked about.
Now, some foods to eat more of would be things like fish and seafood, like salmon and shrimp. They are good for sperm. They have good amounts of omega-3 fatty acids that have been shown to improve sperm count and quality. Fruits and vegetables, whole grains as well, and lean proteins. So staying away from the red and processed meats to more leaner options like chicken or low-fat dairy or turkey. And olive oil. Olive oil is great. It's part of the Mediterranean diet. It has been shown to improve fertility in both men and women.
Another big topic that comes up often when we're thinking about sperm and sperm health is heat, specifically heat to the testicles or to the scrotum. A lot of people wonder whether it's a big deal or not, right? So it is true, though. The temperature of the scrotum for sure is really important for sperm health. And sperm are very sensitive to temperature. And even slight temperatures changes can actually have a big impact.
This is why the testicles are hanging outside of the body, actually, to protect them from being too hot if they were inside the body. And as a matter of fact, there's a condition called undescended testes, where we know that if they descend too late in life, then they're not functional anymore. And it has a lot to do with the fact that they're not hanging outside of the body with that is a few degrees cooler.
So when we're talking about heat. What we're really saying is things where the testicles might be submerged or in a very hot environment. So like taking regular hot baths, for instance, saunas, hot tubs, doing these things on a regular basis can increase the temperature of the sperm and can impair sperm production. And so if someone's trying to conceive, it's better to try and minimize these things and limit exposure.
Another thing would be tight-fitting clothes or having the laptop or your lap for a long periods of time, mm-hmm. or mobile cell phone use, and also occupational heat, things like people who are working in a kitchen, for example.
Yeah. And another big one that people don't think about so much is the seat warmers in your car.
That's true.
That's another big one.
Especially if you spend a lot of time in your car.
Exactly, exactly. So that one's better to avoid as well, mm-hmm. for optimizing sperm health.
Now, it's important to know the occasional hot shower is probably not a big deal. Mm-hmm. I know somebody who asked me that, but we're talking more hot tubs and saunas, jacuzzis, things like that.
So then along those lines, what are some of the supplements that can improve sperm quality? Obviously, getting things from the diet is best, but it can be really, really hard sometimes. And so sometimes we'll use supplements to kind of optimize things.
I actually went the rabbit hole when I was researching for this podcast, to be honest. There are a lot of studies out there. Just this is a difficult topic to study because, and this is something that Warren's mentioning, like what you see on a semen analysis might not necessarily translate into a live birth, right? Mm-hmm. So when you look at the studies, you might say, okay, these supplements improve concentration or motility, but you don't necessarily know that that translates into better DNA fragmentation and most importantly, into live birth. But having said that, there is a few supplements that came out in the literature have having some evidence behind them can improve sperm quality. Number one would be coenzyme Q10, which we talked about it as well in our episode for women. It's a powerful antioxidant that can help protect sperm cells from oxidative damage.
Mm-hmm. Another popular one that's probably more studied is zinc. So zinc for sure is essential for the production of healthy sperm and can improve potentially sperm count and motility in men who are taking supplements who have a low level of it.
L-carnitine is another one. It's an amino acid that plays a crucial role in energy metabolism. It might have an impact in the sperm motility and morphology.
Mm-hmm. Vitamin D, specifically vitamin D deficiencies, has been linked to poor sperm quality. And as we've said before, you know, pretty much every Canadian is deficient in vitamin D, and we all probably need to be on a vitamin D supplement.
Also, vitamin C and vitamin E are both important antioxidants that have been shown to, again, help with sperm count or motility.
And of course, omega-3 fatty acids, which are one of our favorite supplements, I think. Omega-3s are healthy fats. You can get them from fish in your diet, flaxseed in your diet. But it can be hard to get enough in your diet, and so taking a supplement it may improve sperm count and motility.
It's also selenium, magnesium, and calcium. So selenium is an important antioxidant, and magnesium is involved in several processes in the body, like the energy production and muscle and nerve function. And calcium is also important for muscle and nerve function. So all three of these macronutrients have been shown to have some impact on sperm count and motility.
And then, of course, folic acid, which, again, we talk a lot about. What's interesting is that folic acid can also be important in sperm production as well. If you're taking a folic acid supplement, you may have that improved sperm count and motility.
And then we also have N-acetylcysteine, which is an important antioxidant. It's also been shown to improve egg quality in women. And again, being an antioxidant, just like coenzyme Q10, it can protect sperm cells from oxidative damage. Another thing that's important to discuss in terms of when we talk about sperm parameters is the frequency of ejaculation.
Yes, right? Because it actually matters.
Yeah. So we've seen sometimes men come for the semen analysis and maybe there's stress leading up to it. And then we will see that they would have abstained from ejaculation for like 15 days. And what we notice is the concentration is okay, mm-hmm. but the motility is very, very, very low. Mm-hmm. So we know that long periods of abstinence from ejaculation, which can be intercourse or masturbation, can lead to decreased motility of a sperm.
And actually, I find in speaking with lots of couples, they purposely may try not to ejaculate until it is that ovulation window that they're trying to store up their sperm because they think it's going to help. And that is the exact opposite. of really what you should do. The healthiest sperm is the fresh sperm, right? And so the testicle is meant to be emptied.
Yeah. So from the point of view of ideal sperm, the best ejaculatory frequency is between 2 to 5 days. Mm-hmm. So more than 5 days, we start seeing the decrease in motility. And from the point of view of fertility treatment, like when we're doing IVF and IUI, we want the best sperm. Mm-hmm. Then if it's less than 2 days, then we might not get the right concentration.
I think you did some interesting research.
A very interesting study called the Harvard Ejaculation Study, which actually looked at ejaculatory frequency in men. And this has nothing to do with fertility, but I thought it was worth talking about. Mm-hmm. Incidentally, we're a healthcare provider. So dentists, pharmacists, veterinarians, optometrists, ophthalmologists, and podiatrists. And these are all volunteers. So they looked at men from 1992 until the study conclusion in the year 2000. They were able to document the frequency of ejaculation divided by different age groups. What they noticed was the high ejaculation frequency was linked to a decreased risk of prostate cancer. For example, compared to men who reported 4 to 7 ejaculations per month across their lifetime, men who ejaculated 21 or more times per month had a 31% lower risk of prostate cancers.
Wow. That's a big risk reduction.
Yes. Like I said, it was a long-term study. The results held up against rigorous statistical evaluation. And even after confounding for other lifestyle factors like frequency of PSA testing, as well as other lifestyle factors as well. Now, it's important to know that these ejaculations, they weren't all about sexual intercourse. Mm-hmm. Ejaculation were defined as sexual intercourse, but also nocturnal emissions and masturbation as well. So there you have it. In summary, there are many things that are not under your control when it comes to sperm, like genetics, for example, but there are many things that are. So some of the things that we talked about is reducing smoking, marijuana, alcohol use, and as well as nutrition, avoid heat exposure. And there are certain supplements that you can either take as supplements or take in the diet. They can have an impact on sperm parameters as well. And the frequency of ejaculation is important.
I think it's also really important, sort of as we're wrapping up this episode, to note that lifestyle factors are hard. Lifestyle is important, but it's not the be-all and end-all of fertility. It's not like if you just get enough exercise or if you just eat enough zinc that your fertility problems are going to be fixed. It's just one factor in a massive puzzle that we don't even necessarily know what all the pieces are and sort of how everything fits together. Even if you go on vacation and you have a few drinks every night, that 1 week trip is not going to completely ruin your odds of fertility, right, or set you back or ruin everything. And that it is all about balance.
Mm-hmm. It's important to understand fertility treatments have to fit into your life. I mean, I have patients who's like, I don't want to go to a wedding or I don't want to go on vacation or I'm canceling everything because of fertility treatment. And we don't know how long the fertility journey is going to be. Yeah. Mine was 8 years. I mean, that's how long I was going through fertility. So imagine if you're canceling everything, yeah, and you don't have a life. So I think it's important to understand that fertility treatments, it's a thing that you're going through that has to be part of your overall life. Mm-hmm. And that would include vacations and drinks here and there. Mm-hmm. And as long as you do it all in moderation, and it's going to include bacon and sausages and processed foods and carbs and sugary drinks.
Yep. Because that is the stuff that makes life worth living. To some degree, right?
I always talk about the 80-20 rule. Mm-hmm. So whatever rules that you want to apply to life for better quality of life, I always think I'm going to be able to achieve them 80% of the time, and then know that that's enough.
And that's a wrap for today, superhumans.
If you're looking to connect, get social with us. Follow us on YouTube and Instagram at My Fertility Podcast, or visit us online at mycanfertility.com. And don't forget, follow, subscribe, and share your favorite episode.
Thanks for listening to My Fertility Podcast and for being a vital part of our community. We know you've got this.
We're signing off until next Tuesday.
If you found this episode of My Fertility Podcast helpful, please take a moment to head over to the review section and leave us your thoughts. Your reviews and comments are incredibly valuable to us and help guide future episodes. We also welcome you to direct your questions to info@myfertilitypodcast.com.
My Fertility Podcast is produced by Rabbit Media, Inc. in conjunction with Dr. Garcia and Dr. Weiss. Music from Mix Kit, Raising Me Higher by Ajay Stellino. My Fertility Podcast is not intended to replace any type or variation thereof professional medical, health, or legal advice, nor should the content be taken as medical advice. Please contact your primary healthcare professional regarding any medical questions you may have. The information presented in this podcast is based on the knowledge and understanding of the host at the time of reporting. Medical knowledge is constantly evolving, and new research may change the understanding of health-related topics. While we strive to provide accurate and up-to-date information, we do not guarantee the completeness, accuracy, or timeliness of the content. The views expressed in this podcast by guests are not those of the host or the management. This podcast is not intended to impose any type of discrimination. My Fertility Podcast and its management are not responsible for any losses, damages, or liabilities that may arise from the use of this podcast.